Accession number 30423, reel 9.
No. Right. The difference between the soldiers, yeah. Mark you, we were in 20th Indian Division, so I must not. I am simply giving my opinion of my experience in Saigon with them. There is a difference. But the Indians fought wonderfully well. The division itself was very proud and had a great history. Fought the Japanese, and as Gracie said, the only way to win the war is to kill the Japanese, and that's what they believed until the peace came. And then the person who is a soldier and fighting starts to revert to a civilian mode. You're two different people. When you think, now the war's over, I'm going to go back home. I've got my family. And I think on that, it's an interesting point, which is not your question, but I did not write home. What's that say I wrote regularly? After that, I did not write. My parents used to call in and say, my wife, who was in the post office, any letters from Jim. There were no letters. I had disassociated myself and only thought of what I was doing, not deliberately, it was done subconsciously. It's a question of survival, I think. You're in a different world now. I'm not on this ship where everything's fine. Anything could happen, particularly in the entire. It's a question of today. What I'm going to survive. That man's a good soldier. That man will fight. This is what I must do. I get that Japanese do this. I'm a different person. Completely different person. You come home, and then you have to try to get back to normality. And that is difficult. That's difficult. Now, it took a while for me. Perhaps if I'd have gone back from the Navy, it would have been easier. But after that period of doing what we were doing, my philosophy, my way of life had changed. And I think if you spoke to anyone who'd been in that, it was a question of surviving, and you survive by an attack. I don't mean going to shoot everybody, but you're attacking the life. You are going to resist whatever. So you forget the easy things, what you've got to do now. I find that very interesting, myself, to think of that. Because it's not a thing you think of in your life. But now I'm analysing what I was like. I've never done that before. I've never thought of. I didn't write home. It meant nothing. In fact, I could have left Indochina earlier. I know that. I didn't. I volunteered to stay. And I stayed to the very last draft. Yeah. So you think of your post-traumatic experience. I don't go much on that, quite honestly. But I do believe that people who were in an intense situation, like the Falklands, change. And they don't ever quite revert to the person they were before. They go back to normality. But there is a streak of something. I found that streak probably changed my way of doing things even right through the rest of my life. I'm a much stronger character than I might have been if I'd not ever gone.
And you mentioned before the lack of discussion afterwards, or the fact that people didn't talk much about their experiences.
Yeah.
Would it have been helpful, do you think, if people had? And
you take the scenario, the returning soldiers, airmen, whatever, home. Now, his family had suffered bombing, rationing, tenseness, worry. They had their experience. They were not going to be over anxious to be worried too much about your experience, your home, you're back, you're safe. They had their war. They're not going to sit around the table and swap yarns. The only people who swap yarns are those who've been together somewhere. You meet in a pub, as I did with the prisoner of war. He became a good friend of mine. I could understand what he had been through, his experience with the Japanese, and mine with the Japanese. Now, because, again, on that little point, the average soldier had little experience with the Japanese. They fought them, they'd been through the war, but they'd gone right through Burma. But they had not. The only Japanese they saw was those dead or those running. I'd lived with them. And that is completely different. So when I could talk to this prisoner of war, we could talk and understand what each other was feeling or meaning. So we go back to coming home. No, they were not particularly interested. I think the war in Europe was the only war that the majority of people were ever interested in. The war in the Far East, well, that was out there. That was to do with the other lot. In fact, that my husband or my friend had been there, yes, that was his war, but we were in Europe, and we knew entirely what happened. We knew about D-Day. So they were living their life, not particularly interested in yours. Now, it wasn't a calculated decision. It was simply, we've had our problems. You've had yours. Let's just get on with it. When are you going to start work? What are you going to do? Where are you going? Now, my own personal reaction was, I wasn't staying home. I got a grant. I went to Manchester. I went to International Marine Radio College and studied and got my PMG certificate to become a Marine, Merchant Marine officer. And I passed. I was courting my wife at the time, but we'd known each other before the war. So I'd come back, perhaps to a service way of life, which I could understand. And I went back to sea. So my coming back home, I didn't come home quite just then. I'd reverted. And it wasn't until we were married and our first child was born that I really had to decide to come back to civilian life.
Did the Britain you returned to meet your expectations?
No. Now, go back one step. The elections were going to come. Churchill was well respected. The Conservative Party were the party that wanted to be the peacetime government. The armed forces were not going back to be servants. We're not going to go back under control. So the majority of the soldiers began to think the Labour government would be the one for us. There was also a problem about repatriation. You would come back to England on points. If you married children, or you had a point system, you would come back. In the RAF in India, there was a great dissatisfaction about who was going to go home. And I think you had the mutiny, in inverted commas, the against the establishment. Why are we kept here? Now, that was not spread through. I think the RAF were more antagonistic. And goodness knows why. Because I think the soldier had a lot more to feel about. So when you come back to what are you coming home to, people came back a bit disillusioned. They were not coming back as welcome heroes, a job and a house for everyone. The rose-coloured glasses were taken off. Peacetime had come, and it wasn't quite what you dreamed about. You're coming back to reality, hardship. So it was a disillusionment. Now, I didn't suffer from that. I knew it existed. I knew it was there. Politics didn't interest me. I wasn't. But I was determined I was going to do something. And that was my blinkered outlook. I'm going to become an officer in the Merchant Navy. I'm going to go back to something I understand. So I took myself out of the disillusionment or worry into that. But I recognised that it existed. I talked to a lot of my friends, and they were, I think the word shell-shocked is a bit too much, but it was a shock to come home. It was a shock that it was over, what am I going to do? But by the time I came back, I understand there had been a reception by the local council, there had been a dinner and presentations. I missed all that because that had all gone by. I was old hat. So what those people thought who came in the early days, I don't know. But when I came home, there was a lack of morale, a lack of direction. And that's why I think the government changed. And my church was no longer the leader.
How did your demobilising work?
I have no idea where I came back. I must have come back on something. I don't know where or where it landed. But I knew I went to Plymouth. I went to the barracks in Plymouth, HMS Drake, where all returning ratings went. You went to the store, you handed in certain items of equipment, but not your uniform. That you kept that, your hat. You were given a little brown attaché case or a green beige one. A grey flannel suit I had, a shirt, a tie, pair of black shoes and a trilby. That's my demob suit. I was given a railway warrant to go home and some money. So we walked out of HMS Drake with our suitcase containing our uniform, wearing our demob suit and trilby, all the other way around. I went home wearing my uniform and carrying this strange outfit. Should have been saved as a souvenir, that. We were then given leave, given discharge. I was very interested to get my discharge papers, exemplary, etc., etc., fine. But I looked down where I'd been posted, and I could not find anything about my being on mobile Y parties. I could not find anything that had been to Burma or into China. And I queried it. Well, I haven't been. HMS Phoebe, where's that? They said, when you were posted, your papers for pay or documentation, whether you saw it or not, went to a certain base. It happened to be HMS Phoebe, and that's where you were listed as being. You were not there physically, but you were there on record. And I often wondered, has anyone ever tried to find out where I'd been by research? If it never finds any of this, what I've actually done, they find out I've been on little shore station somewhere. That's interesting, because anyone doing research must sometimes get baffled. Well, they never did any of that which we thought, but it only is where you were on paper. Actually, I came home and promptly went back into the Naval Hospital because I had appendicitis, and Eileen was 21, I missed her party. That's my homecoming.
Since your Y unit had been indirectly linked with the work at Bletchley Park, had you had to sign any sort of official secrets or keep quiet about?
No, I don't think so. I have no recollection of having. I looking back, I mean, because of the Y parties, vote parties, no. One gets a feeling, looking back, simply on one's memory or instinct of what happened. It's a bit of a Fred Colonel's army. Someone had thought what a good idea to have these people who could read Japanese, send them somewhere where they could listen in and hope pick up troop movements or intelligence. And with them would be these people who could decode the Japanese and tell us. Now, I know one Wo-Wo party had great success on getting a raid on naval ships that was going to take part, intercepted the messages, and they were congratulated on that. But I think it was a question of, well, that's what you're going to do, see what happens. And I don't think they realised the extent of what a mistake it could be, or what a success it could be. Let's see what happens. We've trained them, the idea is good, there'll be mobile parties, and wherever somebody thinks it would be a good idea to send them, send them. Some would have ended up doing blind nothing, some would have had success. I can only say mine was a bit of a mixture. That we went, and some success, and some was not non-starter. And I think the history of the Y. Now, there is an association called TELES, and every member was a TELES in this group. We have our own magazine, and it's only in the last 15 years that we have been contacting each other, and I have contacted a number of mobile party people. None of us really knew each other. None of us knew our paths crossed. I think as the secretary of TELES, he and I had met, obviously, in Rangoon. We had travelled on HMS Nith because we knew exactly what had happened, how the ship had behaved, what had happened. He had come from doing another job, and I have put together different stories of the different mobile parties. Now, three of them who I was in close contact with now died in the last 12 months, and I've kept their letters and their stories of what they did and things that happened, because there's no record, and I hope to publish them in the magazine. Their letters, not what I say, because I don't think any of us knew what each other was doing. I thought it's not mysterious, it was simply they were trained to read Japanese, good idea, send them one more party, good idea, find these officers who can speak Japanese and do decoding, good idea. And the war ended. What am I going to do with them now? Well, that little lot could go and take over, so I got, that could go to Singapore and so forth. And I think we were a ragtag Fred Cardinal's outfit. Albeit intelligent and useful, I hope. Yes, dear. It's 1 o'clock.
Did you consider staying in the regular Navy after the war?
No. No, that did not occur to me. I saw no future as a telles with extreme limitation of promotion in that particular role. It would be if one would leave, gain enough education to go back on a commission, yes, but to continue from where we left off, a definite no. And in any case, I had in my mind getting the grant from the government, which I was successful in getting, to go to the College in Manchester. So I had not returned with that in mind, but it came to fruition fairly rapidly on return, because I started the same year as I came back.
You were talking a little bit about this just off the tape, but what now is your opinion of the overall British strategy in Vietnam and Indochina after the war?
Well, as of those days or today?
Both.
Well, right. Indochina, French Indochina, was not our interest. It was a French colony. Once the French had taken it back, it was up to them. Politically, and I think for England or Britain, it had no designs at all, or any plans, or any opinion. It was over once we left. The fact that the French lost the war with the Viet Cong, in one respect, is surprising, with the amount of armament, technology, and personnel to fight a war, until you realize that you're not fighting another army or another country. You're fighting the population, or part of the population, where a great part want you out. The other part don't like you, but it will do nothing about it. And a few who want to have something out of it for themselves will support you. You cannot win that sort of battle. You're going to lose. And the French lost. They lost seriously in North Vietnam, because China is much to blame for that, supplying so much material. But of course, it was the Vietnamese who made the trails through the jungles, which the French thought they're impossible to get through. They did. Again, the Indochinese, the Vietnam, had somewhat of the same mentality as the Japanese, not by belief into an empire, but belief it was their country, belief that we're going to kick out the colonialists. And what, if you kill one, you get another one. If you wanted ammunition brought in under secrecy, plenty of people would do it, children, women, you cannot beat that. It's going under your nose, you can't. The French thought they would create a fort system in North Vietnam particularly, and fight from that. You can't do that. You become isolated, and you do not control the roads, you do not control the traffic, and you must bring anything but air. And when that fails, you've nothing, so you retreat. America feared the domino effect of communism. One country, next country, next country. And even we, I think, believed, yes, they could get through Burma, India, this effect of domino effect. So we must stop it somewhere. And they thought they would stop it in Indochina. But again, the way the French lost, so did the Americans. You cannot kill the population. You can't wipe out a country. But with America, they thought saturation bombing, defoliation by Agent Orange, which was a terrible mistake, would win the people. They alienated the people. But what stopped the American War was not entirely the Viet Cong. It was the American civilians, the people, the public, were up in arms against the loss of their young men, against the war. What is it to do with us? Something we're going to face in a moment. So America pulled out of Saigon. What happened? Ho Chi Minh, communism came in. But gradually, as time has gone by, it's a very affluent country. They've got tourism. They've got wealth in their agriculture. They've got back to the way of life of America, without America being involved. And they're doing very well indeed. So that both wars were doomed, both were costly. Well, that is my opinion of that. If you bring us up to date, apply it to Iraq. Apply it to Iraq first. We went to war because of the dictatorship of the country and this myth of missiles, a fear. We must stop this before we are atomized ourselves, etc. That's extreme thought. We thought politically how to win a war with America and anyone else who wished to come and help. But no one had thought, what do you do when you've won the war? Can you win the peace? Can you create an administration? Can you bring back the wealth of the country? And yes, it could have happened, but we didn't go about it the right way. We alienated the people. And both sides, which they divided themselves, of course, and they're at each other's throats. So we have created a near civil war, as you'd ever want to get, without being a civil war. With ourselves now trying to be peacemakers and losing very badly. As that is not the fault of the military, it is the fault of politicians. And the lack of guts to do it, anything about it, or the willingness to do it by the United Nations, who say a lot, but do very little really, do an awful lot of talking, but they haven't controlled the military situation. I got no answer to Iraq. I think it's a sad, sad situation. One could be quite ruthless and say, well, pull right out and let them sort it amongst themselves. And whoever wins, wins the country. But of course, the politicians won't like that, because who's going to control the oil fields? Who's going to control the strategic situation of the Middle East? And that is a domineering factor over and above the military question. Perhaps in the first Gulf War, Bush should have gone ahead and finished it all together. But he could well have been left with the situation we've got now.